hopefully Josh Richardson makes the trade not look as bad.
Yeah, I mean, they did offer him an extension, so I guess they have some type of faith in him, possibly. Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Business Casual Basketball Podcast. We're back on for number 155. Glad that you all have taken the time to listen to this podcast. Really excited to discuss a few recent extensions that we've seen in the NBA here. It could be a little challenging to kind of find some things, to find some content in this kind of down period in the NBA schedule. But, you know, there is one team that has made a few extensions here in the last few weeks. And I got to thinking, who follows the Celtics on a deep level? Who really, really cares about what's going on with that team? And then my man, Devin Blaylock, came to mind for me. He recently just transferred to the University of Georgia, follows the Celtics pretty heavily, and he knows what's going on over there. He knows a little bit about what the Celtics are trying to accomplish. So, Devin, thanks for taking the time, my man. Always great to catch up with you and talk Celtics, talk ball. Really looking forward to our conversation, man.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate you having me on here. I'm excited to talk basketball with you as well, man. Always a good time.
Yes, sir. So, you know, there's been some teams that have made some moves recently, and extensions have been probably the most common transaction that we've seen across the NBA. And, you know, it's kind of interesting that the Celtics kind of went this route with multiple players. So we're going to get to a few of those guys here in a minute, but I wanted to kind of just lead this conversation off. Just wanted to ask you, how do you feel about these transactions in general? Like, are you a fan of kind of keeping some of these guys around for a longer term, or were you looking forward to more cap space being available to the Celtics next year if they kind of went in a different direction?
I think it really depends on the player, honestly. Like, we had Marcus Smart as one of our guys, and that's been one of our bread and butter guys the past few years, longest tenured player on the team. So I love seeing him get his money sticking around. But overall, I do like a little bit of change here and there. But, you know, we got Tatum extended, we got Brown extended, and now Smart's extended. So, you know, that's really like the glue of the team. And now we just got to find the right pieces to put around these guys. And I think with the new coach and everything, I think we will see a little bit of shifting around, figuring out what players fit his scheme the best. So I'm excited to see what we do. Like I said, those longer tenured players that are really like stuck with the team and help build it up, really like seeing those guys get extended. But I do also like seeing some moves be made.
For sure. I'm with you, man. It's going to be interesting to see where the Celtics kind of go from here. Cause for next year, they have some options. You know, Horford's not guaranteed. So if they want to kind of switch gears on that position, they can kind of go in a different direction. But a lot of guys are actually locked up for multiple years. You know, Of course you have the cornerstones, you got Tatum and Brown. They're going to be there for at least three or four more years if they're not traded. And then now you have Smart, Williams, and Richardson on board for an additional year in the case of Richardson, and then multiple years in the case of the other guys. So if we're going to rewind this thing a little bit and look at where this team was last year, I think it's safe to say it was a slightly disappointing finish to their season. I'm sure you could speak for a lot of Celtics fans when saying that I think you guys have been accustomed to finishing a little bit better at the end of the season. Second round conference finals last year, that you made it against the Miami Heat, and, you know, you were on the doorstep of the finals. So, you know, looking back and seeing a first round out is disappointing, but of course there's context to that situation. You know, Brown wasn't available for that matchup against the Nets. So I don't think there's much more they could have done in that matchup. They did grab a game in that series, which I didn't see coming. I thought it was going to be a sweep. So they deserve some credit on that front. But, you know, a key pillar of this team for so many years has been Marcus Smart. And that's kind of where I want to start this conversation with the extensions. You know, I mean, he got a 4-year, $77 million extension, which was the maximum amount that the Celtics could have offered him in this situation. So that does include a trade kicker as well. So that's interesting to note. So if we're going to zoom in on Marcus Smart, I think this is a well-deserved extension. You go into next year, you're looking at a nice pay bump. So he goes up to about $17 million for the 22-23 season. And then from there, I think it's 8% raises. So 18.5, 19.9 into 21.3. So I think most people would say they're a fan of this deal. I'm sure you would agree with that, you know, as being a core piece of that team. Great two-way player. And he's got a lot better in some key areas over the past few years. So I think overall that's a good solid extension for the Celtics that I would probably do 10 out of 10 times, just considering what he brings to that team.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, I love Marcus Smart getting that extension. Longest tenured player on the team. He's really been like the heart and soul of that team for as long as he's been there. Huge defensive grinder, huge hustler. He's finally like gotten the past couple of years, he's gotten that jump shot going well. And that was apparently one issue Brad Stevens said that he had with him was his inconsistency. But especially this past season when he was available, it definitely looked like that jumper was getting a lot better than it was, say, his first two or three years in the league.
And then kind of zeroing in on that jump shot, I think it's very important that Smart added a more consistent shot to his arsenal, because you can never have too much shooting in this league. Having wing players that can, first of all, just kind of run the offense, go through pick and rolls, just kind of be a steady presence on the court when it comes to ball handling. But then on top of that, you got a guy that can knock down a decent amount of shots. I mean, that's huge for that team. So if we flash back to his first few years in the league, that was definitely a sore spot for him. His low point was his second season, where he was only at about 25% from there, and that was on four attempts a game. So it wasn't like he was shooting like two threes a game. You know, he was getting up a decent amount of attempts. And then now this past season, I mean, he was at about 33%, still not great, but you know, overall, you know, getting to the low to mid 30s is definitely a huge step forward for a guy like him. And he's gotten even more bold about taking those shots, five and six threes a game now, as opposed to the four that he was earlier in his career. So overall, very solid deal, and it's easily tradable. So if something comes along down the road that, you know, another player that the Celtics want to acquire, I mean, that's a very tradable salary, you know, average of 18, 19 million a year, easily movable. So it's not like they have to keep him for 4 years. You can move just about anybody in this league, and then Marcus Smart is going to be one of the easiest guys to do that with because of his skill set and then because of that salary that's pretty reasonable in today's NBA.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, if someone's trying to move him, if they end up going that route later on, like if you're getting a guy like Marcus Smart that can play defense 1 through 4, maybe 1 through 5, depending on who you got at center that night, you got a guy that can defend all those positions. You got a guy that's starting to knock down that jumper at a more consistent rate. Teams are going to want that for around $20 million a year.
Hands down. I mean, the defensive part of this equation is one aspect that I think we have to think about when considering what he's worth. I think a lot of times, and I've had this discussion with other people on this podcast before, but I think defense is undervalued a lot of times. And, you know, a defensive star is every single time you're going to get paid less than an offensive star. You know, unless you're a guy like Rudy Gobert, you're like your defensive player of the year, then of course you're going to get the bag. But most of the times, you know, if you're like all defensive first or second team, but you're not really in that conversation as like the best defensive player in the league, you're not going to get, you know, a ton of dollars. And I mean, the situation is a little bit different from other guys, but you know, Smart is out here making 18, 19 million. And then you look at some other players that are more offensively minded, and it's a little bit more like the DeMar DeRozans of the world that play almost no defense. You know, they're going to get some more money. So I think it's fair to kind of put that in the equation as well. But I mean, overall, you can't deny that he has huge impact on this team. And I think it's very valuable because it's not like Smart is a guy that's going to decline in future years, anytime recently. I mean, he's only 26 years old, so still some room for him to explore a little bit more of his game. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, he's not a super young guy, but he's not old either. So he's going to be a very valuable player for years to come. And I'm glad that the Celtics are going to retain him. Now, question for you here for next season. Are you on board with, or maybe not even next season, do you think the Celtics should kind of plant him as the permanent starter on this team, or do you think he works a little bit better as a sixth man coming off the bench to change up some looks? Just curious to see what you might think about that situation.
I'd say personally, I really do like bringing out that lineup that's got something along the lines of Smart at 2, Brown at 3, Tatum at the 4. But obviously that's going to be your small ball lineup. If you come out against a bigger team that night, they might dominate you in the post, but obviously we've seen the NBA go away from the post game, so you don't have to worry about that quite as much now. But I do like it if he's at the two. I've heard rumors of him starting at the one this season. I don't know how I feel about that.
Interesting.
Especially with Schroeder, like he's proven that he can be a starting NBA point guard. I've heard rumors of them wanting to bring him off the bench and have him a six man, have Smart starting at the point guard. But we really got to figure out that point guard situation. That's for sure. But to answer your question, if Smart's at the two, I love him in the starting lineup.
Yeah, that's a really good analysis. Just looking at their situation, it's going to be interesting to follow that guard rotation, because as you stated, you know, Schroeder has proven that he can be a starter in this league. The question is, I don't know how good of a starter he is, because if you go back to last season, you saw how he performed with the Lakers. I wasn't particularly impressed. You know, he had a few good games. Like, he was good, but for a title contender, I don't think he's the guy that you want 35, 38 minutes a game in the playoffs, that you're relying on, that you're counting on for vital possessions. Like, he doesn't strike me as that kind of guy. We got the same story in Atlanta. I think he was kind of like okay, but he wasn't great. LA, the same thing. Okay, see where he exploded. I mean, he was a sixth man primarily. So we're going to have to see how the Celtics operate that situation. If they want to start Marcus Smart at the one, I wouldn't be opposed. I think that's a good direction to go, at least to start. And then you also have Chris Dunn that you can kind of plug him in here and there and kind of see how he's gonna fare. But you got Peyton Pritchard too. So, I mean, Peyton might be ready for some more minutes, man.
Yeah, dropping 94 in that Pro-Am game. He's trying to do something.
For sure, man. I got him up close and personal with him at a summer league, and he's definitely an impressive guy. Overall, I think there's a lot of guards that are going to be vying for playing time between Richardson, Smart, Pritchard. I mean, all those guys, Langford, there's some options there. So we're going to see how they operate that for sure.
Lots of different lineups they can use. New coach this season, Udoka coming in. So I think we're going to see a lot of these different lineups and looks, especially early in the season.
Facts, man. You touched on the post play a little bit earlier. That's a good time to go into Robert Williams to look at what he got in his extension. So Robert Williams, a.k.a. Time Lord, agreed on a four-year, $54 million deal.
Absolute steal.
Extensions. This is interesting, man, because if he's healthy, if he plays to his potential, absolute steal, hands down. But I think, you know, I've heard some people talk about this on Twitter, though they were a little bit worried about this deal because they were saying basically you didn't have to pay him now. You could have waited another year. You could have saw how you did this season. A key stat that Wojnarowski put on his tweet here is that he only has 13 career starts. So for a guy with like a limited sample, it's a little bit, it could be seen as a little bit of like a rush, so to speak. So I think there's an interesting like risk reward proposition, but I think it's a fair deal if he plays like he did this past season. And I think there's potential for him to exceed that if he stays healthy and then he continues on the trajectory that he's been on the past few years, because he's gotten better every season. And I think that should continue, seeing as though he's pretty young. I think he's only like 22. So
yeah,
it could work out for him.
Yeah, absolutely. He's gotten more minutes each and every season that he's been there. He's going into his fourth season now, so we haven't had a ton of seasons, but he's gotten more minutes. I know he's got that issue like with his artery and his leg, and that's why his playing time has been limited. I know not a ton of people know about that, and I wish I knew more of that condition so I could share a little bit, but basically it's just like, there's artery in his leg, and if he plays too much or gets like too stressed out with it, then it can end up leading to blood clots. And then we have another Chris Bosh situation, forcing him into early retirement. And we don't want that.
Not that at all, man.
Yeah. But you see, like you said, small sample size, but we've seen what he's capable of. He can jump through the roof. He goes up and gets your alley-oops. He goes up and gets his blocks. Probably might be bold to say, but I'd say top 10 post defender in the NBA. But I think that'll come with more time. I'm hoping since we got him on this extension, We've yet to see him play 20 minutes a game yet. So I kind of want that to be the clip that we at least see this season now that we've signed him to that extension and shown that we're kind of putting that faith in him. So that's what I want to see. And like you said, he continues to improve. So see what we get out of him this season.
As you said, man, it would be nice for him to kind of eclipse that 20-minute mark. You know, as of now, he's only got about 18.9, you know, this past season. And it was even lower before that. So it is a little bit concerning. Not only is it like the games played mark, but it's the minutes per game mark. Mm-hmm. So with that condition, like, I don't know if he's ever going to be able to assume like a large load in terms of minutes per game. You know, if he's capped at 25 or something like that, I think it kind of limits his role on the team. I don't know if you can put him in as a permanent, like, full-time starter at the center position. So it's a little bit interesting to see that they went with like a 4-year deal and, you know, they went with that extension right now instead of like waiting until next season, because I don't know, if it were me, I kind of would have wanted to see him maybe eclipse 20 minutes per game and then show that, you know, he can play a decent amount of games. Like, he played 52 last season, which is, it's okay. Not great, but yeah, I mean, I don't think there was any kind of like rush for them to do this deal, but you know, we'll see. It could end up being a genius deal, like, for sure, if he reaches that potential. And I'm glad that you brought up that post defender designation, because, you know, I think that's his greatest skill. You know, 1.8 blocks per game last season. It could be seen as a hot take for sure, but I mean, you're a Celtics fan, so you're entitled to a few hot takes because this is your team, man. So like, go crazy, man. Like, I love to see it.
Yeah, absolutely love Rob Will. Really, like I said, my hope is we at least get to see him play 20 minutes a game. You mentioned 25 minutes a game. I think that would be great if we could get him to that point. And I really hope that this extension is them kind of putting that faith in him and knowing that he's going to be able to play these minutes and produce like he has been. And then after this season, that extension is just going to look like a steal if that does happen.
For sure. Because if you look around the league and you want to get a comparison going between some guys that are pretty similar in terms of the role they play for their team, we can look at a guy like Nerlens Noel, who just got re-signed. You know, he plays a similar role. I think it's a good comp to use. Another one of those really solid post defenders, for this year and next year, you know, he's at about $8 million and $9 million. So Williams definitely has more upside. You know, Noel, I think, is kind of plateaued as a player. He's not really going to get that much better. Mm-hmm. With Robert Williams making $4 or $5 million more per season, I think that is reasonable because, you know, I think he has farther to go in his development. So I think right now, I think it's fair to say that Williams and Noel are kind of worth around the same amount of money, but Williams has potential to exceed that because he's younger and, you know, he has rockets on his feet. You know, he can throw down pretty much any pass thrown anywhere near the rim. And I think there might be potential to explore in terms of more of a post game. Maybe he gets more post touches. So, you know, do you think that he has more to offer in that department as far as his offensive role?
I don't know about post touches, so to say, because he is a little bit on the smaller side as a center. I believe he's like 6'9", 6'10". Yeah. So I don't know about post touches necessarily, but when you can get him, and I'd love to see him and Schroeder develop some kind of chemistry this season and really be able to get that pick and roll game going. Because when you get Williams rolling to the rim, like you said, you can throw it up anywhere. He's going to go get it and put it in the basket.
Oh, yeah.
And that stuff's just so exciting to watch. That's that energy spark that we need a lot of times, too.
Big time. Like, he gets fans, he gets everybody on their feet, basically. Like, when he is going towards the rim, you never know who's going to get caught under the basket by time or any given time. But I want to give you the opportunity to discuss a center that was briefly on the Celtics, and he's no longer on this team. He was recently traded, but you wanted to talk about this guy before you went on, man. So like, yeah. Tell me, what was the Celtics thinking behind trading Moses Brown, man? Another guy with huge upside. Like, I guess they do have Horford. They do have Williams. They have some options. They got Bruno Fernando. how disappointed are you that the fact that Brown is no longer on this roster?
Man, I could not tell you what the thinking was behind that one. I wish I knew, because I'd like to know as a Celtics fan. But you got Moses Brown that we basically get gift wrapped because we're trying to get rid of Kemba and his nasty contract. We basically get Moses Brown gift wrapped with Al Horford, and you've got a 7-2 center that against us had like a 20-20 game earlier in the season, and like 19 of those rebounds came in the first half. Like,
I forgot that was against you guys.
Yeah, and that's exactly what we need. Is we need that big man that can go get those boards, because especially when you're locking down Robert Williams as your future starting center, it looks like you want that guy that can either play alongside him or come off the bench behind him and fulfill that same role, because that's something we've lacked for many years now, is having that solid big man. And like I said, we basically get gift wrapped this young big man. I think he's 21 years old.
Yeah.
7'2", like he's going up and getting his boards. He's growing in his game. And then we just go and trade him away for another guard. I was a little disappointed, but hopefully Josh Richardson makes the trade not look as bad.
Yeah, I mean, they did offer him an extension, so I guess they have some type of faith in him, possibly. I think there's two ways to look at the Richardson extension. I think on one hand, you can say they have faith that he's the guy that can come in and give them another 3-and-D presence on the floor with some offensive capabilities. But then the other end is like, I think it's just, you can see it as like a escape valve, so to speak. So if for some reason he's not really working out, it's a decent salary that they can trade. It's the kind of the same philosophy that we talked about with Marcus Smart. Easily tradable. You know, it's a pretty low salary. It's just above a mid-level exception, about $12 million, nothing crazy. So that puts him at now for this season coming up and next season, he's at about $24 million, I believe, guaranteed. So it was interesting. I think that is the reason why it was only a one-year extension. It kind of gives him that safety net so that they can still get something for him if he doesn't really work out with this roster. I have high hopes for him, though, because I saw him up close and personal with Miami for his first, I think it was like 4 years, and I saw him really blossom offensively in addition to becoming an almost all-defensive team type guy. So which side of the fence are you on? Do you see it as like, we believe this is the guy, or let's just add another year just in case we need to ship him off to another team in the NBA?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because like he hasn't played a game for us and we're giving him an extension. So I don't know if they've seen anything that they really like in him. I feel like he's one of your typical 3-and-D guys. He can go out and shoot 33% to 37%, anywhere in that range, from 3-point range. He can go play some solid defense for you. But I just feel like we're kind of loading up on those type of guys right now. And I'm not sure how this is going to play out with us extending Marcus Smart, like you mentioned, Chris Dunn, and now you got Josh Richardson. I feel like these are all kind of the same type of players, just at like different skill levels. So that trade might be a good point where they give him that extra year. So then if things don't work out, or they just decide that we don't need that position, then they've got something that they can trade away instead of just losing him in free agency this year.
Yeah, that's it's very interesting. You know, a 1 year extension is something that we like. I can't remember the last time I really saw a 1 year extension. You know, you usually see like options. So, you know, there's like that kind of variability in that last year where they can opt in or out or whatever. But like, yeah, 1 year extension, I noted on Twitter, it's pretty rare, I believe. But let me offer Celtics fans a little bit of hope right now. If you're coming in thinking that like, he's just going to be a defensive guy, he's just going to just hit some spot up threes or whatever. Like, if we're going to break this down by what he can do on offense, to kind of change the narrative a little bit, he did average 16 points a game in his fourth season, his last season with Miami. That was the season where I think the wing rotation was a little bit less capable. There's less talent. So Josh Richardson was like relied on to generate more, generate his own shot more often, get the team into the offense more often. So it was like him and like Rodney Magruder and some other guys. And then Jay Rich just took the opportunity and ran. Like, it was so cool to see. You know, he was getting a fair amount of shots. You know, at that time he was getting about 14 shots a game. You know, that's a, you know, probably a third option in terms of shots per game, second or third option. And, you know, he shot a decent percentage, you know, nothing crazy. And he was at about 35% from three. And, you know, he was taking charge of the offense. So I will say for Celtics fans, I think that player is still in there somewhere. It didn't work out in Philadelphia. The roster was whack. Dallas, I thought it was going to be his time to shine. It didn't really work out there either. He was getting some DNPs and stuff towards the end of the season. But with guys like Tatum and Brown to kind of take some attention away from him, and he can slot in as like the third or fourth option on offense, depending on the lineup, there's real potential there for Josh. So as a Heat alumni, like, I wish him the best. I really hope he breaks out this season to get back to his old self that he displayed in this fourth season. I think it's still there for him. I think he can still hit that level. And I'm hopeful that that extension is going to be a sign of good faith that he pays back in full, because I think he has it in him to this point, for sure.
Listen, I love podcasting. Who doesn't? The process is great until you get to the part where you have to edit and distribute your podcast. It's time-consuming, and we all love convenience. Well, here's the most convenient option possible. It's called Anchor. There's creation tools in the app that will allow you to record and edit right from your phone, tablet, or computer. It will distribute your podcast for you on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and other popular platforms. You can make money from your podcast with minimum listenership, and it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go to the free Anchor app or anchor.fm right now to get started. And trust me, you won't regret it.
Absolutely. Yeah, I remember that year in Miami, because people were thinking, hey, this is going to be the next big wing guy. Like, this is going to be one of those dudes. Like, he's putting up, like you said, around 16 a game. He was shooting the three nice. He was playing great defense. And then, like you said, he goes to Philly during the process, or maybe at the end of the process. I don't remember exactly when, but like you said, didn't work out there. He goes to Dallas, you end up with Luka, you know, he's taking a bunch of shots. You end up with Tim Hardaway, you know, he's taking a bunch of shots. So it just didn't really work out for him there. So hopefully he can bounce back. Hopefully we get that kind of player, and he's not going to have to put up as many shots. Well, unless he's coming off the bench, that opportunity might be there. Depends on what, like I said, what the lineups end up looking like. I feel like we've got some solid depth coming into the year with Smart, Brown, Tatum, Schroeder, Richardson. Like, we've got shot takers. You got Nesmith that was looking solid in summer league. You got Pritchard. Yep. So it's really all going to depend on the depth, who's getting what minutes. But if he can make a way for himself, then we're here for it. We'll accept him.
Oh yeah. It's like, if you come in and you can, you know, be one of those gritty players, you can do your job. Like, There's room for you in the hearts of the fans, for sure, man. So I feel that. You know, one last point about Boston. I mean, this is a big year for them, because you're getting into the prime years of Tatum and Brown. So expectations are high. There's a lot invested in this team in terms of, you know, what they pretty much invested, like, from an asset perspective. And of course, you got to look at the salaries. You know, these guys like Horford is over 20 million. Tatum and Brown are over 20 million. Marcus Smart is almost 20 million. You know, there's a lot of money poured into this team. So, you know, their total salaries account to 149 million. So they're over the tax. They're over the apron. So they definitely have a lot invested in this team. So this is their time to kind of go to that second round, go to the conference finals, possibly the finals. It's going to be tough, but if one or two of those X factors that you mentioned, if Josh can get back to the guy he was before, if you know, one of those young guys can pop up. Neesmith can come out here and drain 40% of his threes and take five a game, give you good defense. Like, if those other guys step up, if Horford can have a renaissance season, the sky's the limit for the Celtics. Like, we know who Tatum and Brown are at this point, but the other guys got to step up when the other two guys are off the floor. That's what's going to make or break Boston's season in terms of how far they can go in the postseason and their run up to a championship.
Absolutely. And that was what I feel like one of our huge problems was last year, was once Tatum and Brown were off the floor, it was like we didn't know what to do offensively. It was rough. Sometimes awful to watch. And yeah. Even when they were on the floor, it was iso ball to either Tatum or Brown, because I don't know if the confidence in teammates wasn't there or if that was just what the play calls were, but we need some of those guys to step up if we want to make any kind of run soon.
Definitely, man. 100% agree. So we're shifting gears here. You know, there's definitely some free agents still available on the market. So the Celtics have primarily taken care of business. The roster is set. Most teams' rosters are pretty set, but there's still the opportunity to pick up a few guys that have kind of been left on the wayside, some forgotten names here and there. The first name we're going to lead off this conversation with, it's definitely not a name that you're going to bring in and have him be end of the bench. I mean, this is a potential starter that's still available on the market. So Lauri Markkanen has had an up and down first few seasons in the NBA. He just finished his fourth season. He's a restricted free agent that Chicago, as of today, still holds his rights. So, you know, his salary for last season was $6.7 million. He has options. If he wants to, he can go the same route that Bruce Brown took in free agency, and he can accept a qualifying offer amounting to about $9 million to stay on that roster for one more season and then be an unrestricted free agent for next season. But I'm sure that he is looking for other opportunities. The Chicago roster has been in flux. It's changed a lot this offseason. I think he's ready for a change of scenery. I think he was actually quoted saying something like that, like he's ready for a change, ready to leave Chicago. I don't blame him, because that roster has been like everywhere over the past four seasons. So just thinking about who might be interested in taking a flyer on him, like maybe somebody like Sacramento would be interested, or San Antonio. I mean, they're changing gears. They're looking for a fresh start. Markkanen is looking for a fresh start. Why not kind of come together on that? Throw them an offer sheet, see what happens. I don't think Chicago is going to match it, honestly, especially if it's a decent amount of money. So he still has a lot to offer as a player. He gets about five or six threes a game as a four. He's a perfect modern day four. You know, not a great rebounder, but he has some skill. So a little bit surprised to see that he hasn't been picked up, but I think there's still potential for a team to kind of buy low on him and reap the benefits, because he's still a really good forward in this league.
For sure. And I'm pretty sure he's still a young guy, around like probably 24 or so. And I think a good salary comp when we're talking about how much he could possibly make would be someone like Davis Bertans, who's making, I believe, around 15 mil a year. And he kind of plays the exact same kind of position, only he's a little more accurate with his shooting. But that's really all he does. Markkanen can at least offer you more of that rebounding and everything too. And I'm not going to do this with everybody, but I do feel like the Celtics could be a sleeper for Markkanen.
Okay.
I've heard that the Bulls don't want to bring in any bad long-term contracts. So my thought process was here. Either A, we have the trade exception from the Fournier trade. So that could be somewhere in that realm. If they want to do a sign and trade, we could add that trade exception with like a couple picks to go that way. So then Chicago's not even picking up any contracts there. Or another option I was thinking was Horford, because like you said, next year's not guaranteed for him. So they could get this year out of Horford, have him bring some veteran presence to that younger roster with, well, I guess Levine's not really younger now, but you got guys like Lonzo and them coming in. And you can have Horford come off the bench, have that veteran leadership, and then you can buy him out or whatever you got to do next season, cut him, whatever. Mm-hmm. So I do think Celtics could be like a sleeper for Markkanen, but I didn't think about it. The Spurs might be a good option. Like you said, looking for fresh starts, both of them are. You got Murray still in San Antonio and Keldon Johnson, and I feel like that's really about all they got going for them right now. Yeah. So bringing in Markkanen, get you a score in there, that would work out pretty solid. Kings, I don't know what they're doing. Drafting more guards. I don't think the Kings know what they're doing.
Yeah, it really is wild, man. Like, just thinking about Markkanen's options, it's a really interesting exercise. And, you know, you talked about that trade exception for Boston. I totally forgot about it. You know, it's definitely a solid option, a solid avenue they can explore. And looking at the amount, you know, it's worth $17 million. So that should be more than enough to acquire Markkanen in a potential deal if they want to go that route. So it's definitely something to think about for them. As for who they send back, I mean, yeah, you know, there's some options on their books. They have some very tradable salaries. So they still have some draft picks to offer as well if they want to throw those in. So, yeah, I mean, he'd be a perfect fit, I think, if they kind of want to bring him in and kind of see what that's all about, if they want to add his spacing to the mix and kind of bring out some more of his skills. Because I think it took until last season with the Bulls for him to really have a consistent role. You know, the first three seasons, it was like you're a floor spacer, and then you're playing a little bit more in the paint because the roster was always changing around him. But if he can just be put into a situation like Boston where things are a little bit more consistent, a lot of guys are locked in for multiple seasons, I think it could really help him in his development. And then, yeah, just going back to San Antonio, man, I mean, they have some forwards on the roster. They just signed Zach Collins, but who knows if he's going to play. I mean, he's been out of action for 2 years, so that's a huge question mark. Lauri Markkanen, I think he's had some injury questions of his own, to be fair, but I think I'd believe in him a little bit more than Zach Collins. And then I don't even want to get into Sacramento. They're whatever. Like, every season it's like, all right, they got Fox, they got Bagley, they're going to make the playoffs. They end up 12th or something. The next season, the same thing, they end up 11th. So I'm just like, you know what? Sacramento can do what they're going to do. You know, who knows? It makes my head hurt trying to figure out their plan for the future. Yeah. They've been all over the map. But staying in theme with forwards, I mean, we looked at a forward with a lot of potential. He's just kind of starting out. How about Millsap? You know, this is a forward that's been in this league for a long time. Over a decade. You know, very solid veteran presence that I think any team could use. I think initially I'd heard that the Nets were interested, but Millsap, it looks like he still thinks he's worth more than the minimum. So he's looking for more. He's probably looking for, I don't know, I guess maybe $5 or $6 million a season. His previous salary was 10. So I don't think he wants to go from 10 to like 2.6, whatever that veteran's minimum is. He wants somewhere in the middle. So that pretty much takes the Nets out of contention. I think I'd heard like the Hawks being a suitor potentially. Like, I don't know how true that is, but there's a few teams out there. It's got to be a contender, though. I think that's the only place left for him at this point in his career. But yeah, I mean, a lot of teams could still use him, come in and play 15, 18 minutes and be a good, solid veteran presence. He's one of the best low maintenance veteran guys in the league. And I think there's a lot of guys, a lot of teams that should take a look at him because I don't think he's quite washed yet. He still has some defense and some 3-point making to offer to a fringe contender or a contender in the NBA.
Like you mentioned, he's got to go to a contender. I feel like there's no other options now at this point in his career. He's only got maybe two seasons left, I'd give him probably.
Yeah.
But he does bring, I'd say, decent defense still. He's on the slower side, but he does bring some decent defense. He can get you some buckets still. We're not going to see 2015, 2016 Atlanta Hawks Paul Millsap. But like you said, he can still come in, bring that good veteran role, veteran presence, and he can help out a team. I don't know exactly where he fits as far as contenders go, but he's definitely got to end up on a roster before the season starts.
Hands down. I mean, with somebody with his experience, like, there's I guess there's no really real reason to not take a flyer on him. I mean, if you don't want to give him more than the veterans minimum, I understand. The problem with a lot of these contenders is like that's really all they have left to offer. You know, maybe they have something like the biennial exception to use, but of course you can only use that once every 2 years. So you're really kind of painting yourself into a corner if you go ahead and use that. So interesting to see who might take a flyer on him. If we're going to look at his production, I mean, last season he was still a very solid player, about 34% from three last season. The year before he'd actually hit 40%. So, I mean, he can hit some standstill threes. You know, if you can get up some space, if you can find him on a kickout pass, that's definitely an option. You know, he can go out there and D up at a decent level, like you said. He played about 20 minutes per game last season. So this is a guy that can, you know, he's more than a token veteran. He's more than a Haslam. Like, he's not quite at that point yet where he's just there to be like a coach, so to speak, which that gets me going down a path of like just wondering, like, why is Haslam not on a coaching staff yet? Like, Dudley just did. I don't know. It's just something that comes to mind for me. It's just very confusing. But, yeah, interested to see where Millsap heads ends up. Miami was a destination as well. I think Miami had been talked. They talked about getting him, but they went with Markieff Morris instead as a veteran four. So, yeah, I would have liked to see Millsap in Miami. I think that would have been a good fit, but who knows? Who knows what's to come with his position. But one last guy I wanted to discuss was James Ennis. You know, a good swing man, a good three. Now, this is a guy I really wanted Miami to pick up because he's like 6'8", got good length. He was previously on the Heat back in, I want to say, 14 or 15. You know, he'd had a tenure before. And, you know, he could be had for a minimum deal, I'm pretty sure. So $3 million last season. If you get him for $2 million this season, I think that's a really good value. I think a lot of teams that are playoff hopefuls or contenders could use his services. So, I mean, how do you feel about James Ennis just providing a role for a team, being in, I want to say his late 20s now, but still being a very valuable 3-and-D wing in this league?
I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not too familiar with his game. I know, like, I remember his time in Miami, but that was about the last I heard of him. But if you're saying you got a 6'8 wing that's not even in his 30s quite yet, and he can go out there and shoot the three ball, I don't see why an NBA team's not going to roster him. Like, you want to bring in those kind of guys. Those are basically what the league is becoming now. That's who's taking over the league, is these taller dudes that can shoot the three, that can go D up. So I don't see why someone wouldn't go roster him. And obviously I'm not saying that he's going to be like an elite guy, but he can come in and provide some quality minutes for a team.
Definitely. And correction, he is 31, so he got over the 30 threshold recently, so just want to put that out there. But yeah, as a guy like I've been watching for a few seasons, I watched him in Miami, you know, I saw him as, you know, just a really easy plug-and-play guy, like another low-maintenance vet, just comes in, does his job. He came in as an older player. I mean, his first few seasons of the league, I mean, he was already 24 at first in Miami. You know, he was in the 2013 draft. He was a second round pick. So he really grinded his way to his current role, but he's played in a variety of teams. I mean, he's played for Houston. When they still had James Harden, he's played for Philadelphia, you know, a couple of years back with that pretty strong roster. And then he spent two seasons with the Magic, you know, a team that was not rebuilding quite yet, but they were definitely not in contention. So he's played a variety of roles. So, I mean, this is a guy that's played about 20 minutes per game average in his career that a lot of teams could really use. I think his best role at this point is probably like a team that's either fringe contender or contender. So, you know, I don't know, maybe a Pacers team takes a look at him, someone like that, possibly a Bulls team if you need another wing. Somebody like that that can still use an additional guy that they can kind of just plug in at any given time. So that's pretty much the story on him. You know, I know you're not super familiar with him, but you can never have too many dependable 3-and-D wings in this league. You know, a guy that can just, you know, very easy to play. You don't have to worry about very much. So that's kind of what I was thinking on him. And, you know, you wanted to touch on Harry Giles, I think, a little bit as well. I think we can kind of wrap up the podcast there. But what do you think of Giles, man? Like, I was disappointed in him last season. I thought he was going to break out, and it didn't really happen for him.
Yeah, I definitely think a lot of people were disappointed in him. Everyone had huge expectations for him coming out of college. He suffers another knee injury. And that's really been a big storyline of his career, is injuries. That's a lot of what we've seen so far. But when he is healthy, you have a 6'10" player that can go out there. He can shoot the three ball. He can put it on the floor and create his own shot. He can get to the basket. He can block shots for you in the paint. And he's only 22 years old. I don't see why someone doesn't take a flyer on him. Doesn't have to be a contender, but someone that wants to try and develop that and just hope that he stays healthy. Like, I just don't see why you don't want that on your team.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest, man. I'm kind of worried about his future in the league. I think last season was his really big opportunity to kind of show that he belonged. Nurkic got hurt for Portland pretty early in the season. I want to say in the first 15 games, he broke his wrist. Enes Kanter is, you know, a good player, but I don't think it's somebody that you want to start every single game and really run offense through. So that was I think it was the perfect opportunity for Giles to assert himself. So in fantasy basketball, I went out on the waiver wire. We operated on a salary cap system. So you pretty much put in a bid for a player, dollar amount. And if you're the winner, of course, you get him on your team. I think I bid $14 for this guy, or $12 or $14 or something. For context, our total salary amount or our budget was $100 for the whole season. So I invested over 10% of my total salary on this guy because I thought this, like, Nurkic got hurt, he's going to take off. He goes out there. He really doesn't do much of anything, to be honest. He didn't even average 10 minutes a game per game last season. So I'm kind of down on him. I'm still a little bit salty, to be honest. That's because he did me dirty a little bit. I think you're a little bit more enthusiastic or positive than me, because I got burned. So I don't know. Maybe he proves me wrong, but that's my take. That was my situation with him last season.
Yeah, I just feel like you got to give him, like, at least one last shot. Like I said, he's only 22 years old. Like, there's still so much room. He's still got like a 4-year window before he's really, like, in his prime. So I feel like a team can easily take a 1 or 2 year flyer on him, see how things go, especially if it's not a contending team. If you throw someone like, I don't know, the Magic out there, the Magic are currently in a rebuild. You've got Cole Anthony, RJ Hampton, just drafted Jalen Suggs. So you've got tons of guards. You just lost Vucevic when you traded him a season or two ago. So maybe somewhere like that is somewhere that Giles could get plugged in at and maybe revive his career. But I just feel like that's a gamble somebody's got to take.
Yeah, for a rebuilding team, I can see the logic in just kind of taking a flyer on him. Like, maybe you bring him in on not guaranteed for a season and just say, hey, you know, you show up and ball out, you're here. If you don't, you're gone. Kind of some kind of just like make or break type of deal. I can see that. Would I take a flyer on him? Probably not. I've been down that road, and it didn't end up so well for me. So I do wish him the best. And hopefully the case is that he just needed to get over those injuries for the first couple of seasons, and he's ready to roll for a team. Because there's a lot of potential, and, you know, he was a great high school player. So the talent is there. He just needs another opportunity, but we'll see. I might take a little bit more time. Maybe somebody gives him a 10-day or something. I don't know. Down the line, we'll see. But I think that's about it for our conversation here, man. I want to thank you again for taking your time out of your schedule. I know you're getting acclimated to UGA. You know, you're trying to make a name for yourself. You got the class and stuff. But appreciate you coming on, man. It was a great conversation.
Yeah, man. Like I said, it's always a blast talking basketball with you. Appreciate you asking me to come on here. Love when I can talk about my Celtics, especially. So I had a great time.
Glad to hear that, man. Glad to hear that. Best of luck to you. Guys, he's going for a career in broadcasting. So this is a little bit of a warm-up for him. Just kind of getting him some screen time, get his voice out there. Never hurts. So definitely rooting for him. Anything you want to plug real quick before you head out? Any upcoming projects, anything that you want the listeners to know about?
So I did just do a interview on my YouTube channel. It is just titled as my name, Devin Blaylock. That's the YouTube channel. But I just did an interview with Oklahoma's punter. So not basketball related, but it is a sports related interview. It was a great interview. He's a Christian guy. So we got to talk a little bit of football, a little bit of faith. Nice. And I always enjoy those conversations. So that's my one little plug is I'd love if y'all went and checked that out.
Nice, nice. Yeah, be sure to hit him up, man. If you're looking for that type of content, that's where you're going to find it. As for our content at Business Casual, it's going to be at bcbasketball.info online if you want to check out some of our content, blog posts, free agent list, things like that. And then for all of our podcast content, things going on at, on social, it's going to be bcbasketball2. That's our handle at Instagram and Twitter. That's where you can find us if you want to follow us and keep up with what we're doing at Business Casual. So thanks again, everybody, for taking your time to check this out. We'll be back next week with more analysis, more NBA takes, more hot takes, if you're into that kind of thing. And we'll catch you on the next installment of Business Casual. So until then, take care. We'll see you soon.